Okay, let's pick up at the Mishnah at the top of Daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis. We're continuing on the halachos of Eish. Right in the previous Mishnah on Daf Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, we discussed what happens if a fire that you light passes over a fence that's 4 amos high, or it passes across a Rishos Rabbim, or it passes across a river. And we said that you're potter in those cases. We went on to discuss the details. Now the Mishnah says as follows. Where exactly are you lighting it, and how much distance does there have to be from where you're lighting the fire up until the nearby area in order for you to be safe? So Mishnah says, Hamalik b'soch shalof, if a person is lighting a fire inside of his own rishos, at kamatavar hadleika, until how much is literally what it means, does the fire pass? In other words, how much do you have to expect a fire to travel? How much space do you have to leave? Rabbi Lazman Azariah said, we view it as though he is in the middle of a base core, meaning to say as follows. A base core, remember we discussed this before a couple of dapim ago when we were trying to figure out, when we were trying to assess the damages that your animal might be doing to various crops, and we talked about the sa'ah and the base sa'ah, and what we said is that a sa'ah, it's a unit of volume, and if you want to put that into modern times, the way that you could think about it is that there's a famous machlokas between Rav Chaim Na and the Chazon Ish. If a sa'ah, according to Rav Chaim Na, a sa'ah is around 8 1/3 liters, and according to the Chazon Ish, a sa'ah is around 14 1/3 liters. And just a way to think about it is that if a soda bottle is roughly 2 liters, so we're talking about a volume of somewhere between 4 and 7 soda bottles. So that's for a sa'ah. Now, a core is 30 sa'ah. A core is the volume of 30 sa'ah. So we're talking about 30 times somewhere between 8 and 14 liters. That's what we're talking about. Now, in terms of now if that's the volume, so what's a base sa'ah? What's a base core? So we said that a base sa'ah is the area of land that can house 1 sa'ah's worth of seed. So that would be, let's say, in terms of Chaim Na and the Chazon Ish, that would be the area of land that it would take to house the seeds being planted when you have somewhere between 8 liters of seed or 14 liters of seed. Or again, to use our soda bottles, just somewhere between 4 bottles of soda worth of seed or 7 bottles of soda worth of seed. That's for a base sa'ah. So if a core is 30 sa'ah, so we're talking 30 times that area. So if for a base sa'ah, we say that the area comes out to about 50 amos by 50 amos. Now, if we're going to use something like the system of, let's say, an am is around 1.5 to 2 feet. So if you want to know generally a base sa'ah, we say that is the square, the area of a base sa'ah is roughly around the size of an NBA basketball court. That's a roughly, if you want to give a frame of reference of how much that is. So that's for a base sa'ah. So what about a core or base core? So a core is roughly 30 times that area. So a base core that we're talking about is going to come out to around 75,000 square amos. Now, if a base core is roughly 75,000 square amos, that let's say that that's around 112. Let's say that's around 112,000 square feet. So if you want to put that in terms you can understand, so then we're talking about if, let's say, an NFL football field is around, let's say if you're including the end zones, that's going to be around 360 feet. So we're talking about the length of one NFL football field by the length of another football field. That's, when we talk about a base core, that's more or less what we're talking about in terms of the square footage of a base core. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, "Rono so ki'ilu hu be'emtza base court." So you view it as though you are in the center of the base court. So imagine if you had the length of one NFL football field by the length of another football field, and you are standing in the center. So we're talking roughly, if the length is about 360 feet by 360 feet, it's a little bit less than that. But let's just go with that to keep things simple. So we're talking about half that area, right? So we're talking about around 180 feet is how much distance we're talking about. So Rav Elazar Nazari says, you view it as though you were in the center of that base core. That's how much distance you have to make sure that there is for the fire, because you can expect that the fire will travel up until that distance. Now, if you recall, though, from Samach Aleph and Aleph, we talked about really two kinds of fires, right? We said that there was a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, what kind of fire we're talking about. Are we talking about a kolachas or a nekvefes fire, right? A kolachas fire is a fire that just goes straight up, and a nekvefes fire is a fire that is bent over it, either because the wind is blowing it down or it's just catching on to various pieces of kindling that are on the ground. But if it's kolachas, if it's nekvefes, we said that according to Rav, it doesn't really make a difference. Even if it goes 100 amos, you're going to be liable. So that's what Rashi says, that this Mishnah is going to be assuming that we're talking about specifically a kolachas fire, a fire that's straight up. Okay, so that kind of a fire, you can expect it. You have to leave a space of roughly a chatzi base core. Okay, that's Rav Elazar ben Azariah's opinion. Rav Eliezer Omer, we've discussed this shita before, he says, Tes Zayin Amos Kederach Rishos Rabin. He says 16 Amos, which is like the width of a Rishos HaRabin. Now, we put this into terms, more modern terms, when we first talked about this, right, when 16 Amos, again, if we're using the, assuming that an Amos is around 1.5 to 2 Amos, so we're talking around an area that's around something like 24, 25 feet, maybe a little bit more than that. And if you want to put that into modern terms that we can relate to, so we said that like a lane on an interstate highway, the standard width size of a lane is around 12 feet. So we're talking about two lanes on a highway. That width of two lanes on a highway, that's what Eliezer is talking about. Rabbi Akiva Omer Chamishim Amar. Rabbi Akiva says, okay, it's about 50 amas. Rav Shimon Omer, and this is where it gets a little bit tricky, Rav Shimon says, well, look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Shalem Yishalem Hamaver Sebe'erom. We're talking about Eish, and the Pasuk says, you have to compensate. Who's compensating? The one who ignites the fire. But notice, the Pasuk doesn't seem to mention anything about Shiur, and that's what we're going to assume right now is what Rav Shimon's point is. Rav Shimon says, Shalem Yishalem Hamaver Sebe'erom Hakol Lefiat Lake. It all depends on the fire. In other words, all fires, you're going to be liable for it. It doesn't really make a difference what. You're just going to be liable if you ignited the fire. Okay, so just to summarize briefly what we had over here, we're discussing how much distance does there have to be in order for you to be exempt from damage that a fire does. So there are basically four opinions in the Mishnah. Rav Elazar ben Azariah says that you'll need to imagine that you're in the center of a base course. In other words, half a base course distance. According to Rav Eliezer, it's about 16 amos. According to Rabbi Akiva, 50 amos. And according to Rav Shimon, it sounds, at least at this point, we're going to assume that you're always going to be liable no matter what kind of fire it is. Okay, those are the four opinions. So says the Gemara, the less later of Shimon Shiur, but the Leika, Rav Shimon doesn't hold of amounts of Shiurim when it comes to fire. Is that true? You're always going to be liable? But Tanan, I thought we learned in the Mishnah. Now, this is a Mishnah that we discuss very much so in Bava Metzia and in Bava Basra. The Mishnah says, Lo Yamid Adam Tana B'socha Bayis, Elam Kin Yeshalav Gabo Gova Dalet Amos. You're not allowed to stand up an oven for usage in your house. And remember, when we use bias in the Mishnah, we refer to the main first ground floor of a house. So you're not allowed to stand up a tanner, you're not allowed to set up a tanner in your house. Elimkin Yishal Gabo Gova Dalam. So unless it has above the top of the oven a space, a cavity of 4 amos up until the ceiling. If you don't have a distance, a cavity of 4 amos until the ceiling, you are not allowed to. And Rashi points out that the residents of the city are able to prevent you from setting up that oven. You'll have to maybe use your oven outside or something like that. Okay, now, let's say you are setting up your oven in the upstairs. You don't live in the lower floor, the ground floor of the house. You live in the upstairs of the house. And somebody else lives downstairs. So now if you wanna put up an oven, if you wanna set up an oven in the upstairs, so how much space do you need? How thick does the ceiling have to be in order for it to not be a problem for the resident of the lower floor? So the Mishnah says, Ashe hetachtav maziva shlosha tvachim, until there is beneath him a maziva. Maziva, Rashi explains, is the, when we talk about a ceiling is comprised of two components, the slats of the ceiling, the wooden slats that they lay down, and then they would fill up that all the slats, they'd coat it and fill it in with plaster. So the maziva is the plaster that they would fill in. So you need to have this plastering of the ceiling has to be three tvachim. Ubekira, now that's when it comes to a tana, right? We know that there's two kinds of ovens. Excuse me, there are really two kinds of ovens. We know that the Mishnayos in the third parak of Shabbos discuss three kinds of ovens, and we distinguish between them based on the intensity of heat that they have, how concentrated the heat is. And we don't have to go through the exact descriptions, but what you have to know is that a Taner has the highest concentration of heat, and a Kira has less concentrated heat. And so therefore, you're not going to need as much of a thick ceiling. So the Mishnah says, of a Kira Tefach, for a Kira, all you need is a Tefach. Vim Hizik, well, let's say you put you took these precautions, you made sure that there was this distance, or a ceiling this thick. Vim Hizik, if it went ahead and damaged, Mishnah Masha Hizik, then you're going to be responsible to pay for whatever damages you caused. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. It's an interesting opinion because the Tanakhama on the one is telling you, take precaution, make sure that there's a distance or a thick ceiling. But then, for some reason, even once you take the precaution, you're going to be liable if any damages happen. Rav Shimon therefore disagrees. And he said, Rav Shimon Omer, lo nemar shiur halalu, the purpose of these shurim were said, elishim hizik patur l'shem, that if a damage, you'd be exempt from paying, right? Why else would I have shiurim? But in other words, it seems pretty clear from this Mishnah that Rav Shimon does hold of the idea that there is such a thing as a shear for fire. How much fire is going to travel or the distance which fire might go across in order to damage. And as long as you keep within that, as long as you have that distance, you're going to be brought there. So that seems to be connected. That seems to be against our Mishnah, where Rav Shimon seems to be saying that no matter what kind of fire we're dealing with, you're always going to be liable, no matter what kind of distance there is. So therefore, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua. Rav Nachman Amar Rav Ravua says, no, you misunderstood Rav Shimon's point in the Mishnah. Again, what was Rav Shimon's line in the Mishnah? Rav Shimon quoted the pasuk of Shalei Mishalei Ma'aver Sabeir, the person who ignites the fire is going to have to pay. And what are the three final words? Hakol Lefiat Leika. Everything all depends on the fire. It all depends on what kind of fire we're dealing with. Well, so we assumed what that meant is that so you're always going to have to pay, no matter what kind of fire it is. Now, what Rav Nachman has explained is that no, what that means when he said Hakol Lefi Hadaleika, that just meant Hakol Lefi Gova Hadaleika. It all depends on the height of the fire. That's what we're talking about. That's what Rav Shimon is concerned about. Meaning to say that according to Rav Shimon, he's basically saying, look, I do hold of this idea that you need distance and that a certain amount of distance is going to be necessary and helpful to prevent a fire from damaging, and that if you maintain that distance, you're going to be exempt. But it all depends. It depends on how large the fire is. Okay. Now, Amrav Yosef, Amrav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Halacha Rav Shimon. In fact, Rav Yosef quoted Rav Yehuda, who quoted Shmuel as having said that the Halacha follows Rav Shimon, V'chein Amr Rav Nachman, Amr Shmuel. And also, we have another Talmud from Shmuel. Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel as having said, Halacha Rav Shimon. The Halacha also is like Rav Shimon. Okay. Next Mishnah. Mishnah says, Amadlik as a Gadish, V'hayu bo kelim v'dalku. So this is the famous case of Tamim, of concealed items. So the case is, if you light a pile of grain, but in the pile of grain were utensils of some sort. You didn't see them. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishnah Masha Besocho. So you're going to have to pay, you're going to have to compensate for the kalim, for the utensils that are concealed in this pile of grain. The Chacham Omer, but the Chacham say, no, Eino Mishnah El Agadah Shel Chitin O Shel Sarin. You know, you're going to have to pay only for the pile of grain. If it's a pile of wheat, you're going to have to pay for wheat. If it's a pile of barley, you're going to have to pay for barley. Now, Hayogadi Kafaslo, well, let's say there was a goat that was tied to the pile of grain. The Evid Samachlo, and there was an Evid, there was a slave that was nearby. Vinishrafimo, and the slave got burnt up along with him. So, what are you going to have to pay for in this case? On the one hand, you damaged property, you damaged his gedi, you suffered him a loss in that respect. And on the other hand, you also killed his slave. So the halacha is chayiv, you're going to be liable to compensate. Now remember, there's something called kamalei bedrabimene, which means that we are going to enforce, punish you with the more severe of the two punishments on the table. And so, if I have an option between being liable for misa or being liable to compensate, well, obviously the more severe of the two is capital punishment. However, therefore, if this Mishnah is telling you that you're going to be liable to compensate, what that clearly means is that you are putter for having killed his slave. Why is that? Because if you notice, the gedi is tied up, but the eved is just chilling nearby the stack of grain. And so he could have walked away. He could have run away from the fire, and he didn't. So you're not going to be liable for Misa for having killed his slave. And that's why you're going to be chayv to compensate for the property damages. Now, Eved Kafas Lo, well, let's say the Eved, the slave, is the one who's tied to the stack of grain. And it's the goat this time that's nearby. Vinisrivom Imo. And the goat gets burnt up together with it. So putter. Then you're going to be putter from compensating. So why are you exempt from compensating in this case? So again, this is because in this case, you're going to be putter from compensating because you're going to be liable for Misa for having killed his slave. Because there's nothing the Eved could do. The Eved was tied up. So you're going to be liable for that. Okay, now, umodim chacham on the Rabbi Yehuda, but the chacham agreed to Rabbi Yehuda, b'malek es habira. If a person lights a bira, there are different explanations given for what the word means. Sometimes it means a palace or a house or a tower. So one of those things, if you burned up some sort of a house, some sort of a structure, so the chacham would then agree. This is really a bit of an interesting case, right? Because given this, if we continue the thought of Taman, so it sounds like if you ever have kalim that are concealed inside of another item, so let's say it's kalim inside of a stack of grain, so we said that there's machlokas between you and the chamim, if you're liable. According to the chamim, you're not liable for the things that are concealed. Well, what about a house? If you burn someone's house down, it contains all kinds of items that are concealed. So are you going to be liable for that or not? So the chamim agreed to Rebuta that if you light somebody's house on fire, shuhu mashalim kol mashu b'sokho, that you are in effect going to have to compensate for everything that's contained within the house, because that's the norm of people to keep things in their house, in their houses. And we'll discuss this in a little bit, but the implication is very interesting. In other words, it sounds like the Chum are arguing that the reason that you're putter, that you're going to be liable for the things that are contained within the house, is that you can expect that people keep things in their house. However, when it comes to a stack of grain, you don't necessarily expect that people keep their utensils inside of their piles of grain. But if there would be some items that are normal for people to keep inside of their piles of grain, then the Chum would agree. All right, so we'll explore that a little bit. So says the Gemara. Actually, before we do that, let's just organize and summarize a little bit this Mishnah. So on the one hand, for starters, we presented the case of Taman. There's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim if you light somebody's gadish on fire and it contains kalim. So it's a machlokas if you're going to have to pay for the kalim that you burn up. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you are going to be liable for those things, and according to the Chachamim, you are exempt. The second point of the Mishnah is that if there's a goat that's tied to the pile of grain and an eved that's nearby, you're going to be liable to compensate for the goat because you're not going to be liable for having killed the slave, so you're going to be liable for property damages. But if the slave is tied up and the goat is the one that's nearby, so then you're going to be putter from property damages because you're going to be liable for having killed his slave. And the final point of the Mishnah is that what about a house? Is it in every house a case of Taman? So if you burn down someone's house, maybe the Chum should hold that you wouldn't be liable for all the things that are burned up inside of the house. And so the Mishnah says no, because it's normal for people to keep items in their houses, so therefore the Chum are going to agree to Rabbi Yehuda that you'd be liable in that case. Okay. Now says the Gemara, Amr of Kahana. Kahana said, Machlokas b'madlik b'soch shalo, the hoch of achl b'soch shal chavero. The machlokas of this Mishnah is specifically, we didn't really discuss where you lit the fire. So Rav Kahana says, the machlokas is where you lit the fire in your own rishos, and then the fire traveled and consumed up the pile of grain in your friend's rishos. Because in this case, Rav Yehuda would hold you liable for the damages of Taman Be'esh, things that are concealed that were consumed by a fire, Rabbanan Patri, and the Chachamim exempt you. Now, Avol B'malik B'Sosh Chaver, but let's say I came over to my friend's house, I'm in his backyard, and I made a barbecue, and now the fire from the barbecue burns down some of the pile of grain in his backyard. Well, in that case, then according to everybody, I'm going to be liable to pay for everything that's contained within that stack. And Rashi explains over here, we're not talking about where your friend invited you over for a backyard barbecue. You had no permission. You had no right to be there. And so therefore, we treat it as though you actively destroyed that pile of grain. And that's why you're going to be liable. Okay. That's Rav Kahana's qualification of this machlokas. Now, Amar Le Rava, but Rava says back to Rav Kahana, well, ihachi, if that's correct, at the Tani Seifa, well, what's going on in the Seifa? On the one hand, in the Seifa, we say, Modim Chacham Rav Yehuda b'malik azabira, Shemasham komash b'socha, Shekindach ne arun laniach b'batim. What do we say in the Seifa? In the Seifa, we said, the Chacham agreed to Rav Yehuda, when it comes to lighting, burning down someone's house, that you're going to have to pay for everything that's in the house. Why? Because that's the norm. It's normal for people to keep things in their houses. Well, wait a second. Where exactly were you when you lit that fire? So the assumption is is that, how did I burn down my friend's house? I burned down my friend's house because I burned it on his premises, right? And but even so, even though I was on his premises and I didn't have a right to be there and I burned down his house, what's the logic that the Mishnah gives me for why I'm going to be liable? Well, it's not because I didn't have a right to be there. It's because the Mishnah says, because I should have expected that he's going to have items that are in that house, and that's why I'm going to be liable. That's what it sounds like over there. Well, if that's the case, liflug velisni vidida, then we should be splitting up and delineating all the various points over here with respect to Gaddish. And what should we say? Then in the ratio where we're having a contrast case, we should tell you, oh, well, when you're lighting it up in your own backyard, and then it goes and consumes in somebody else's yard, then that's what we're talking about. But when I'm lighting it in my friend's backyard without permission, then everyone would agree that I'm going to be chayv to pay. So why didn't we do that? If there's differing logic over here for the two different cases, then why don't we spell that out? So therefore, Rava disagrees with Rav Kahana, and he says as follows: Ella Amar Rava, and therefore Rava rejects that, and he says, "Betarti pligi." They're arguing about two points. Pligi b'malik b'soch shelo v'hoch v'achol b'soch shachavero. They are arguing about a case where you light it in your own rishos, and it goes and the fire goes and consumes in your friend's rishos. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev atoman ve'esh v'rabban tzarvi lo mechayev, or lo. I think they changed that over here. V'rabban lo mechayev, that makes a little bit more sense. That Rabbi Yehuda holds that you'd be liable for the case of Taman Ve'esh, and the Chama would hold that you are not liable. Upliginami b'malik b'shal chaveru, but they also disagree when it comes to lighting in your friend's rishos. Rabbi Yehuda sever misham komash b'socho, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're going to have to pay for everything that's in it. V'afilu arnaki, even an arnaki, even a purse. Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold that you're liable for that, even though it's not really normal for people to keep purses inside of stacks of grain. Rabbanan savri, but the Chum hold kelim shadarkan lahatman, utensils that are normal to be stowed away, to be hidden inside of a pile of grain. Kegon marigan, which is like marigan, for example. Rashi explains marigan is like this slab of wood that they used to put pegs into. In other words, they used to make like a very crude sort of comb, a very large crude comb that they would use for threshing. So this threshing implement, so like that's normal for them to keep inside of a stack of grain. Uklei bakar, or the various kalim that are used for cattle. Hudim sham, so then that's what you're going to have to pay for if that's tamim. Kalim shein darkan lahatzman, but the utensils that are not typically stowed, hidden away, begadish, in a pile of grain, lo masham, you're not going to have to compensate. Okay, so just to summarize very quickly to organize what Rava is telling us, Rava rejects Rav Kahana because Rav Kahana's point doesn't really seem to fit into the Mishnah. And so therefore, Rava says that really they're arguing, machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chum is about two different points. Number one, they argue when you light the fire in your own rishos, and the fire goes and consumes in somebody else's rishos. So in that circumstance, there's machlokas. Rav Yehuda says you're going to be liable for Tamim Ve'esh, and the Chum say, no, you're not liable for Tamim Ve'esh. That's number one. Second thing that they argue about is, well, let's say you didn't have a right to be in your friend's backyard and you lit up a fire. Now the question is, am I going to be liable even for things that are not typically stored in piles of grain? According to Rebuta, he says, you're going to be liable for everything, whether it's normal kalim that are normally stowed in there, whether they're like a wallet or something that's not stowed in there, you're always going to be liable. The Chum say, no, you're going to be liable only for things that are typically stored away, hidden in that pile of grain. Okay, let's wrap up with this price. So, Tana Rabbanan, the price says as follows: Hamalik as agadash vayu bo kelim v'dalku. If a person lit a pile of grain and there were kelim, there were utensils inside of it, and they got burned up as well. Rabbi Yehuda omer mesham kol mashal yibisocho. Rabbi Yehuda says you're going to be liable to pay for everything that's contained within that pile of grain. You're only going to have to pay for the pile of wheat, if it's wheat or barley, if it's barley. Firon makom kelim kilhu malitvon. And of course, we view the area that's occupied, the volume that's occupied by kelim, we view it as though it's grain. So that's the amount of grain you'd have to pay. You'd have to pay for all the grain that is around the kelim, and then you'd have to imagine that the area, that's the space that's occupied by the grain, by the kelim, is filled with grain. Now, with respect to what is that said? That's specifically where you lit it in your own backyard, and it went and it consumed, it went, traveled, and it burned up a pile of grain that's in your friend's backyard. But let's say you lit in your friend's backyard, then everyone would agree, or depending on what version you have, then you'd have to pay for everything that's contained within it. Now Rashi points out over here that Rava metarz lo latamei bekelim shadarkan lahatmin bagadish. And of course, if you learn like Rava, then Rava's going to have to touch up this price. So to be discussing specifically the kinds of kelim that you would that are typically stowed away. That's when everyone would agree that you'd have to pay for everything. Rabbi Yehuda would agree to the chamid mashal makom lechaveru. Let's say I lent out an area of land in my backyard that I allowed you to be there, lahagdish gadish, to stack up a pile of grain, behigdish, and in fact you did, behitman, but then you also stowed some things in that pile of grain. Shein masham ela to make gadish bavad, that Rabbi Yehuda would agree to the chamid, that in that case you're going to have to pay only for the value of the gadish alone, not for the items that are contained within it. Now, why is that? Because with the way that we're viewing this, at least the way that Rashi explains it, is that when I invite you to use some of my land and to stack up a pile of grain, I'm essentially accepting some sort of a shmira myself. And so I really accepted shmira only for the pile of grain, not for the items that you can that are concealed within it. Lahadish chitin vehigdishon. Well, let's say I invited you to use some of my property to stack up a pile of grain, and I invited you to stack up a pile of wheat, and you instead piled up some barley, or saorin vehigdish chitin, or vice versa, where I invited you to stack up a pile of barley and you piled up some wheat. Chitin vechipin besarin, or I invited you to pile up wheat and you covered over the wheat with barley. Saorin vechipin bechitim, or I invited you to stack up a pile of barley and you covered over that barley with wheat. She'en mishalim ela d'mei saorin bavad. And then in these cases, you'd have to pay only for the value of the barley. And the basic logic over here is, Rashi tells us, is that basically the owner of the field is able to say, look, I invited you to stack up a specific kind of grain, and I saw that you had something else there, so I just didn't bother looking after it. Okay, let's hold here.